We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
NBA Most Valuable Player, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis trailing the lob. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
1 second.
Hey there, welcome to the Eurostep Podcast Network NBA Finals Game 3 post-game podcast. The series has not yet begun because the home team has won every game. Yes, the Bucks take one away from the Suns, not yet evening out the series, but getting closer, now down 2-1 after a 120-100 win over the Suns. There's a lot to talk about. There's actually a ton to talk about. We're going to get through all of it. I'm Ty Windisch. I'm joined by Rohan Kadi of the Eurostep podcast, Adam McGee of the Win in Six podcast. Before we get to the big topic, the one we have to cover first, you know what I'm going to ask. Fellas, how's it going?
Doing great. Doing absolutely great. Fantastic. The city of Milwaukee is absolutely buzzing right now. First finals game in Milwaukee since 1974. Had to break out the spotted cow post game. It just says a Wisconsin classic. It's a good day to follow this Milwaukee Bucks team.
I'm going to say good. I'm going to hold off on great until Wednesday, and I'm confident that I'll be breaking great out on Wednesday.
There we go. Not even just Milwaukee. Fireworks going off in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, right after the game ended. I can only assume because of the Bucks. So all of Wisconsin is leading into the celebration.
People have taken to the streets in Ireland. They're all chanting "Go Bucks!" I can hear them.
You know, the Bucks wear green. I feel like it's a pretty natural fit. But
well, an Irish rainbow.
I was going to say plus Pat Connaughton. Like,
well, that's why the Win in Six viewership numbers are so strong over there. They can't resist.
Pat needs to commit. Pat needs to commit. That's all I'm going to say on that.
Pat's not the first Buck I wanted us to mention on this podcast. We're not putting off Giannis this time. Giannis Antetokounmpo, two back-to-back games with at least 40 and 10, finishes with 41 points, 13 rebounds, 6 assists, 1 steal, shoots 60% from the floor, 76.5% from the stripe, which is maybe an even more fun number, definitely a more fun number than the field goal shooting. There's so much to talk about with Giannis. We're going to dive into it. But for me, seeing these games back to back, it's like there's no more question of what level of player he is. I mean, we had some moments in this very playoff run where we wondered it. There's been pundits screaming from the rooftops in Bristol and other places that he was not that guy for so long, including after game two somehow. It's over. We don't have to worry about that anymore. Not the series. The series is far from over. The conversation about Giannis, though, I mean, we have the evidence. He is that guy. He is that guy who can carry you to a championship. He's in the process of trying to do it right now. That's just special to see. And that's the kind of thing where I feel like until you get to the finals, you don't recognize the importance that game-to-game like moments can have. We're here now with Giannis, and that deserves – almost separate recognition from the series itself, because obviously it's a really important revelation for the Milwaukee Bucks and just for us who've watched and cheered for Giannis for so long now.
We're just witnessing greatness. That's it. That's all we have to say. I mean, we'll say more, obviously, but that's what I was leading into.
You know, a mic drop would be pretty effective, though, if we just cut
short
the podcast
episode.
There. People are like, yeah, they've got a point.
We're witnessing greatness. Thank you for listening to this episode. I kid. But that's what I led into with the game two post game. Even though they had lost the game and there's plenty to dig into, I wanted to start off by talking about Giannis because we witnessed one of the greatest finals performances in a single game that we had seen. We were gushing over Giannis being the first player since Michael Jordan to put up 20 and a quarter in a finals game. And what does he do? He comes out there in game three, and backs it up with an even equally as dominant performance, even probably more dominant performance, as we'll get into. 41 points, like you mentioned, Ty, 13 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal. Just absolutely dominant. He was finding his spots. He was controlling the pace of the game. This is not normal. Like, this is not a normal finals performance. We see, obviously, two teams play in the finals every year. They always have great players, but they've never separated themselves quite like this. This is one of the rare series performances at the highest level that you will ever see in NBA history. Our friends at the Blue Wire Pods Twitter account, at Blue Wire Pods, make sure to give them a follow, have been detailing all the historical significance that Giannis is placing himself into. Let me just get a couple out there. Let's see. 30 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists through 3 quarters over the last 25 NBA Finals. Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Giannis Antetokounmpo. You want another one? I'm sure you do. 40 points and 10 rebounds in back-to-back NBA Finals games in NBA history, like the entire history of the damn league. Shaquille O'Neal, LeBron James, Giannis Antetokounmpo. He's reached the mountaintop. He really has. This is just proof, like you were mentioning, Ty, that he is one of the greatest players that this game has ever seen. Not just in the league right now, but across time. And we're seeing that play out in front of us, right in front of our eyes. I said in front of us twice, but whatever. The point stands.
He's unstoppable.
Yeah. I want to let you go, Adam, but a team with not one, but two supposed Giannis stoppers in Jay Crowder, the guy who everyone said did it last year, and Ayton, who is supposedly a beautiful matchup for Giannis defensively.
If you ain't got one, you've got none. Maybe that's, you know, this idea that they've got two. Well, that when you get to that stage, they're just the bodies to throw at him, and he's now had a lot of looks at those guys. And I think unless you've just got one guy who you're like, he's going to stick to him throughout and he's going to cause him problems, you're in a tough spot. And does that guy exist? Does that guy exist anymore? I do not know. The Bucks could have left Giannis in for a few more minutes here and he would have got Kareem's record for most Bucks all time in a playoff game. Like, he was 5 points off it, I believe. That's 46 points. Prediction, that's going to fall before this series is done. Don't see any issue with it. I think we're looking at 40 plus a night at this point, because as much as a guard-driven team, a team with two star guards, makes a tough proposition for the Bucks in terms of matchups, the flip side of that is they have absolutely no way to stop Giannis. They just cannot stop him. And I saw the thing I really wanted to see since the series started, and that's DeAndre Ayton in foul trouble. It's like, yep. I see no reason why you can't do that or get him close to that every game. And even more importantly, you mightn't have to get him all the way there, because we saw how Monty Williams reacted to that. And he didn't just hook him. He left him sitting out for a long time. Even when he took him out, they were down 28 minutes to go in the fourth. He picks up his fifth foul and he takes him out. It's like, leave him in. Let him foul out in a minute. What's it matter? Like, you were still trying to win the game. Everyone else wasn't getting hooked at that point. So it's like, maybe leave the guy in. What are you saving that foul for? So that was an interesting wrinkle, and that comes from Giannis being just so, so aggressive. It's what I really hope to see from him, and all the more impressive because he didn't start that way. He obviously had to come out of the game after 3 minutes, looked a bit gassed, a little bit unusual, although not something the Bucks fans haven't seen before. Giannis can have those kind of issues early in the game, and he does generally come out of a game pretty quick for his first break before coming back in for longer stints. But with that, and with doing the thing that I'd said on our pregame show, I was hoping he wouldn't do too much of, which is come out passing instead of attacking. He still just picks it up eventually and scores 41 points in 38 minutes. So it's like, what do you do? What do you say about this guy? It's completely and utterly ridiculous. And just there's no answers for the Sun. And it must be so demoralizing because the amount of times now where he is just like right there for offensive rebounds, or he's just grabbing anything that's kind of loose. It's like all the 50-50 plays with him around the rim that you're like, oh, against every other player in the NBA, if you're the Sun, some of those are going to go your way. They all just end up with Giannis putting the ball in the hoop.
He looks better now than he did in game two. Like game three, not like just playing better, but I think physically, I thought it looked like it was less burdensome for him to do those things in game three. If he's going to continue, I didn't want to have a preconceived notion, right, that he would look better as the series went on, because you just don't know. You don't know how the injury is going to affect him. If it continues like this, that's very, very good news for the Bucks. Giannis's consistency this postseason, and it's funny because he got killed for the one legitimately bad game since the start of the Brooklyn series, which was the game two. Since then, the only time he has not had times, he has not had at least 30 points and 11 rebounds, were a blowout win against the Hawks where he only played 29 minutes, the game he got hurt, and his first game back from injury, game one of the finals. Every other game he's played, he's had at least 30 and 11. Every single game, like he rolls out of bed, puts up 30 and 11 in the playoffs. Again, the time when supposedly he's not able to play, that's over. It's done.
I mean, those are his season averages. Like, and it just translates now. That's the thing.
Think of the conversation we had with Chris on the last pod, right? Like, it's not normal to put up at least your season averages every single game in the playoffs.
Exactly.
That's what's changed.
It's translated.
He's relentless now. Like, he's just like, I will not be denied those numbers. That's what you need to be like if you're the best player on a championship team. That's Giannis. Like, we're here. It's freaking beautiful.
He just honed the skills bit further as well.
What skills?
Let me tell you, Ron. He had a Euro step in this game, right? Big fans.
We love that.
He had one to just like dance past Mikal Bridges. And it was so tight. Like, you know, when a Giannis Euro step used to be like really kind of loose and wide, and it would be using his length by kind of stretching his arms out.
Like,
and
that dunk on Serge Ibaka.
Yes, exactly like that. And they're the kind of plays that when you get to the playoffs, they actually make it really easy for help to come across because he's making himself a big target. I think with both his spins and his Euro steps, you can see something where it's just a little bit tighter now. He has those moves. He can go to them just a little bit faster in the movement, a little bit tighter to his defender, where it's not so easy for help to come across. And someone like Mikal Bridges, a really, really good defender, is just left to look completely and utterly stupid. Like, he's not even close to him. He can't get a hand near anything. He's like, wait a minute, he was here 1 second ago, now he's gone. Oh, the ball has already gone through the rim. Like, I just don't know what anyone can do about that. And then there is, like, this wasn't even his best game for this. He was probably better at it in game two. But, like, just those one-legged fadeaways and touch shots around the rim, his comfort in going to those, his aggressiveness in going to them, it's a big deal. Even some of his mid-rangers, he's not relying on any of that. He's not overdoing it. But when he needs to go to them, he's stepping in with confidence, where you actually look at him now and it's not like, oh, he's terrible at this shot or this isn't the shot. When he steps into those, you're like, well, he's probably going to make it because he's just making most things now. Even he had a tree that kind of went in and out, and it's like, yeah, it came off pretty hard, and that's why it came in and out. But at the same time, it was really close. And now
I thought it was going in 100%.
Anything he does in the playoffs, you're like, oh, it's probably going to work out, which that's a big deal. You know, that's how you might just win a championship.
You guys want to know another fun Giannis stat?
I do.
This one was pointed out by the legend OGGZ on Twitter. Found it on the ESPN broadcast. Most points in first three career finals games all time. Giannis is fourth, 103 points.
And game one was his first game back from what looked like a catastrophic knee injury.
Yeah,
I'm actually amazed he's fourth. Do you have the full list?
Yes. Number one is Rick Barry with 122.
Makes sense.
Two is Allen Iverson, 106. Number three is Willis Reed with 104. And then Giannis with 103.
Interesting.
Rick Barry, built different.
Well, it's just known mostly just for being an asshole. He probably just wouldn't pass. That's not a hot take. Like, that's there's a lot of articles about this. Giannis is like...
Did you need to sully Rick Barry's name on this episode in particular? You know, 20 points.
I was just giving context for why he has the record. Giannis,
you could have made a free throw comment or something. There are other things Rick Barry's known for.
Barely 5 months away from turning 27 years old. Giannis is at a Kupo. I want to talk about the free throws. That's already... No, I've said the one thing that I have one Rick Barry fact I carry around. I already used it.
Why do you carry around Rick Barry facts?
One fact. I don't know. I just think it's interesting that people didn't like him.
I'm sorry. I've derailed this.
Yeah. Team effort. I'm really trying to push through on Giannis stuff here. I'm already seeing, I think since either for the series or since game one, he's taken nearly as many or as many free throws as the Suns and the whistle and everything else. Listen, they're doing it on purpose. Like, if you're watching the games,
they're desperate to foul him.
Yeah, they are like basically take fouling him half the time, whether it's a shooting foul or not. They're just trying to play the percentages because they know if they don't, it's 2 points every time. Like, this is not, we don't have to make this a big discussion. This does not have to be, it's going to be, but it shouldn't be a long topic. I mean, it's like Atlanta's take fouls. It's just a silly thing that a team, I mean, not silly, an annoying thing a team is doing to try and grift some sort of a little advantage. And the numbers probably work for them. It wasn't great in this game where Giannis shoots very well from the free throw line. But I just think it's silly to bring up those numbers with no context. I mean, Devin Booker is out here kicking out, turning corners like he's Bryn Forbes. Of course they're not getting as many free throws as Giannis. Like, Giannis is being purposefully hacked every single time. And the Bucks are allergic to fouling guys. Like, it makes a ton of sense. I don't think that number is going to change a lot, no matter what the Suns say, because as long as that, unless they change what they want to do, because that's what they've been doing. I mean, they're trying hard to hack Giannis and not let him get clean looks around the basket.
And what's I just got complaint? Another good, yeah. Go on. You've got another stat. Go on. Let's
I've go. Got another fun Giannis stat. This one's from StatMuse. This one just made me laugh. It's a Giannis and Thanasis Antetokounmpo combined for 41 points in game three, the most by a pair of brothers in NBA Finals history. Family. And then it's just Giannis behind in front of Vin Diesel's car. It's just, it's incredible.
Is this like, what's the very famous Wayne Gretzky stat? Him and his brother have the most points in NHL history or something.
Yeah,
it's something like I think his brother has 1 or 0 points. It's a cool.
It's like the Kobe and Kwame Brown thing where they combine for like 83 points.
Yeah. Okay, Adam, go ahead. We're done making weird stat allusions now.
I'll never rule out the possibility that Rohan's going to find more stats.
Oh, Rohan. Yeah, I just meant pulling in unrelated stats. Rohan will have more stats.
I don't know what the Suns could complain about with the free throws. One, because they're fouling them every time. Yeah. They're fouling them. Like, there's just. There aren't a whole lot of those that you can look at and be like, that's even a borderline call. They're just fouls.
Half the time, a guy is raising his hand like, yep, that one was me.
But it's also someone who gets to the free throw line at a very high rate all of the time. It's not like a complete outlier. Does he always shoot 17 free throws? No. Does he shoot 17 free throws like from time to time, multiple times in the season? Yeah, for sure. There are nights where he can get to the free throw line that often. It's not completely unprecedented. And if he's playing as aggressively as he is, and you are going to foul him, you know, it's, anyone who does that is going to be clutching at straws. And I'm sure there'll be some, but I don't think there's any real basis. You know, any Suns fans who are being serious about it, I don't think there's a complaint about that. You've got to focus on other things. You've got to focus on, okay, Giannis is the best player in the series. What else can we do here? What else is there to be got for the Suns? And yeah, if Devin Booker is not playable, we'll get into it eventually. I don't know. No, I'm not, Rohan. I'm not getting that spicy with the take. I'm not saying Devin Booker is not playable for the series.
Monty Williams said that.
Not even close to that. But I do not understand what the thought process was during the second half of this game. You know, he got the Brook Lopez treatment.
Yeah, just a quick thing on the free throws again. You were mentioning, Adam, just like the shot selection as well. I have the actual numbers, another stat here. This is from Seth Partnow on Twitter. Phoenix attempted 16 shots in the restricted area all night. Giannis had 12 on his own.
that doesn't count fouls, right?
No.
Yeah, so he was down there the whole game. I mean, yeah. It's silly.
How many free throw attempts per game do you think Giannis averaged against the Suns in the regular season?
16.
17.
Rohan wins. He's very close. 15.5. So it's like, what can they complain about tonight? He shot 1.5 free throws more than he shot against them in the regular season. It's like, I mean, this is what you do when you play him. You can't defend them. You foul him.
I mean, like, some teams, I feel like, foul him less and just hope. The Suns are actively fouling him to not let him, you know, score otherwise. And it backfired in a bit. It's going to backfire. It's going to continue to backfire because the guys who are taking those fouls are guys the Suns cannot afford to sit out. And that's the other part about, you know, sure, is it a good idea on its face to foul Giannis and make him shoot the free throws to score points? Yes, but, you know, it's got to be Ayton or Crowder, really, unless someone is really pulled into the paint. And if they're that far pulled into the paint, and A, if it's a little guy, Giannis probably is going to make it anyway. And B, your defense is pretty out of whack. If it's Mikal Bridges having the take foul on Giannis, like, someone's either really wide open or something's messed up. So it's obviously.
I don't think it's strategy, though, Ty. Like,
I think there's some strategy to it. I think they're being very intentional.
Most of them cannot defend him. Even when they try to defend them clean, they're fouling them. Like, because you just can't, as you said, with the guys, with where their rotations are in the front court in particular, you just can't have any kind of strategy that's reliant on fouling them because you don't have the players to execute that. I mean, if there is some sort of concerted effort in that front, the Bucks will win this series in six games. You know, like, the Suns cannot continue to do that and think that's okay, because regardless of if it's a good Giannis night at the free throw line or a really, really bad one, they're going to run out of players and they're going to be playing Frank Kaminsky a lot. And guess what? You're going to lose by like 50 points if he's on the floor for any length of time.
Yeah, he's terrible. I don't know. Maybe it's not entirely intentional. I do think, especially if there is a wing player down there with him, the Crowders and Torrey Craigs of the world, I think there's a little bit of, like, I'm not going to let him go up clean. We can't. It's almost like similar to the visceral reaction to Booker and CP getting Lopez one-on-one in game one of, like, even if this is the right idea, it can be hard to look at. It can be hard to look at Giannis just laying the ball in over and over because no one outside of Ayton is nearly big enough to do anything about it. I think it must be pretty hard to not try and do something, even if all you can really do is hack him.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
It plays against what the Suns want to do, right? We talked in the series preview with the timeline guys. We've talked during the series. One of the things that the Suns really do well, we even talked at the beginning of this episode, like you mentioned, Adam, one of the things the Suns like to do is, even if Ayton is in foul trouble, like you were talking about, Ty, they can go big while going small, which is what you said earlier, Adam. It's not big enough, realistically. They have one big guy, like you just said, Ty. They have one big guy, and even though one of Phoenix's strengths is, oh, even if Ayton's not on the floor, we can still destroy you. We can play multiple styles. We can play big. We can play small. If you go away from Ayton, you're playing into the hands of the opposing team's best lineups, best strategies, and best player. It's just, we've seen this being untenable throughout this series, and it just came rearing its head for the Suns this game.
It's funny how the Hawks was supposed to be the series where it was just like the Hawks are too small. And the Hawks were too small. They did a much, much better job. Now, they have more depth. I think that's a key detail. They have more depth, particularly in the front court. But they found ways to survive. The Suns are just not showing any evidence they have or will find. Like, Jay Crowder, your point is right, Ty, where it's like, if Jay Crowder's got to take some fouls. Like, I think Ayton is the player that would hurt the most by being in foul trouble, but they also couldn't afford games where Jay Crowder's in foul trouble and doesn't play a whole lot. Same would apply for Mikal Bridges. Like, those three guys, what they have behind them is such a colossal drop-off. Colossal. Cam Johnson is the only exception. I like, from a Suns perspective, that, well, they didn't do it quite enough, to be honest, that Monty Williams pulled Frank Kaminsky for the stretch where they did find some success, and he put Cam Johnson out there. They went ultra small. They got away with that because the Bucks weren't quick enough to punish them, but I still think that's their best chance of surviving, and that's one where, you know, if Bud gets his head straight and figures out some really simple things in regard to what's there for them, you know, the food being left on the table in this series, even that's not going to work. Like, the Suns just are in a no-win spot if there's any kind of foul trouble, on either Crowder, Bridges, or Ayton.
Crowder's the only reason this wasn't more of an embarrassing game.
The non-Crowder Suns shot 3 for 24 from deep. Jay Crowder, 6 of 7.
That is Bucks-like.
That's really super Bucks-like. Except they never have the Crowder guy who's 6 for 7. That's just the Bucks team is the second one.
Bucks shoot 9 of 31 last game?
I think so. I don't understand how Jay Crowder is 6 of 7 from deep, all of his shots were threes. He plays 33 minutes. The Suns lose those minutes by 11. That's just brutal to get the outlier, because, you know, everyone knew there was going to be one or two of these Jay Crowder games, and that's why he averages 34% or whatever the hell from deep. It's like 6 for 7 and then 1 for 4 a bunch of times. To not even just lose, but lose his minutes by double digits in the game where you get the obscene. And they weren't, like, it wasn't a typical Bucks, like, oh, he's wide open in the corner every time. Like, he was getting step backs. It was obscene. I mean, he was like dribbling, letting a guy fly past him. Damn near did the Trae Young shoulder shrug. I was like, no way. And just nailing shots. I was like, all right, it's the Jay Crowder game, I guess. To get smoked in his minutes in that game is pretty tough for the Suns, who I thought, honestly, I was like a Bucks pessimist for most of at least the first half. Yes. Most of at least the first half. And I thought they had an avenue to, in the third quarter before it got out of hand for them, really get back in and maybe take control. But I mean, Booker having the game he had, and then Ayton getting in foul trouble and Monty Williams going away from playing him, I thought really enabled the Bucks, even though Bud trotted out the Teague Portis Pat threesome twice, including in the third quarter, the pivotal third quarter. But thankfully, it came against like Frank Kaminsky, Torrey Craig campaign. It's like, oh, well, okay. If those guys are out there, I still wouldn't like to see the Bucks capitalize more on those minutes, but at least you're not going to bleed points playing three bench guys if the Suns are also trotting out some of these like kind of just inexplicable groups.
Jeff Teague was a plus nine.
Yeah.
Jeff Teague always ends up being a plus something. He's good at that.
Ty, you were mentioning Jay Crowder getting demolished, or like the team getting demolished in Jay Crowder's minutes. That's because he's a negative on the defensive end now. And that's not through any fault of his own, realistically.
I don't know if he's a negative.
He's not a positive, I'll say that.
Is that not just because he's against Giannis?
Yeah. I was gonna, well, I mean,
like, I think he's as positive as it gets for the Suns.
But that's still not a positive.
Well, it is in comparison to what will happen if someone else ends up having to like take an 8 minute stretch. Trevor Ariza.
It's a relative positive. It's not an actual positive.
He's close. I think that's being a little harsh on him. Like, I don't think he's ever been the NBA's best defender, just in kind of in a vacuum when you look at what he is. He's a very good Giannis defender, and that means absolutely nothing now. But
he's not hampering Giannis from scoring.
It's PJ Tucker against LeBron when he was on the Raptors. That's where we're at. Also that. Yeah, that too.
That's giving Jay Crowder a lot of credit.
Yeah, and this, I don't know.
I think relative to how most players hold up.
Don't take it relatively.
I think that is giving him too much credit against Durant.
You've got to take it relatively. I mean, PJ is the same.
No, I think PJ gave Durant more problems than Tucker is giving Giannis.
Than Crowder is giving Giannis.
Crowder is giving Giannis.
Tucker may occasionally be giving Giannis more problems than Crowder. I think he's as good as it gets for them, and I think he's like
that's still not good.
He's not way down in the league, but there is no good. So that's like if we're naming the list of who
I'm not naming it, I'm just saying positive or negative.
But every single basketball player in the world may be a negative, is my point.
That's fine. That's still a negative.
All right. I don't know how we frame books conversations from now on. It's a good problem to have. But if it's just like every defender ever on Giannis is a negative.
I think Rohan, to put it clearer, he's not being overtly helpful on defense.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
That's it.
That's all I'm trying to say.
That's about Giannis, though, is all I'm countering with. That's all.
I do think them getting killed in the Crowder minutes has more to do with the Suns as a whole in this game than it does with Crowder. But I also agree, Rohan, that he's not like that guy being out there. It doesn't matter that much to Giannis anymore. Yeah, I don't know if any assignment does.
Does anyone have an answer to this? I was just generally curious. Like, do we have a name now for who does matter?
If his leg exists, Kawhi. I think Kawhi still matters. If his
been
leg,
a while. It's been a while since we've seen him.
He disappeared from the playoffs and we have never heard more, so who knows? But I think
that's weird.
Yeah, no one talks about it 'cause of Clippers, but I think healthy Kawhi is still. I'd be interested to see over a playoff series. I think Anthony Davis could be an issue.
I can't believe I got away with saying Anthony Tolliver.
He's had some good run. I thought Blake did pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, Blake shows the same thing that Crowder does, which is, you know, it's strength.
It used to be enough, but it's no longer enough.
Exactly. Well, it's because Giannis is stronger than everyone. But
yeah,
it's just you can't rely on that alone, but you need a really, really kind of strong base to have any chance of competing. And Crowder's got that.
I want to talk about the Drew game. Drew Holiday coming through at home. There's, again, this
still players at home.
Yep. I was still a bit of a Bucks pessimist in the third quarter. I thought, and we're going to get into the Lopez thing. I thought not playing Lopez and rolling with Portis for extended stretches was a dangerous playing with fire decision, especially I think in that quarter it was Lopez, or maybe that was second quarter, not third. I don't know. But there were times when like no Lopez, no Giannis, or just no Lopez for extended stretches. And Drew just goes ballistic and just starts burying three after three after three, ends up shooting 5 for 10 from deep on the hole, 21 points, 9 assists, 5 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 block. Hard to argue defensively, maybe as good considering Book was his primary cover. Devin Booker held to 3 of 14 shooting in this game, gets to the foul line 5 times and inexplicably just doesn't play again after some point in the third quarter for reasons. I don't know if we've had any quotes on that from Monty Williams yet, but
I think it's a DNP bad.
If it is, that's credit to Drew Holiday. So brought it on both ends. We saw the performance we wanted to see.
That's disrespectful. I take that back.
Yeah, be very
Devin
careful.
Booker is very good.
Be very careful. This is why I was cautious later as well. I don't want to say anything that I'll come to regret.
But the Drew game, he showed up. It was here. It was not sustainable. I'm a little worried about all the threes, but I do think he wasn't taking 10 until he got hot. I am going to choose to think that at least. And the way he was shooting, it was hard to argue with his shot selection.
Let me walk you through a stretch here in the third quarter when the Suns were starting to get closer in this game. So the Suns had cut it to 6 points on a Cam Johnson cut off a Chris Paul layup with 6.5 minutes left in the third quarter. Drew comes back, hits a 3, 9-point game. Suns cut it down to 4, again off a Cam Johnson 3, who was also going ballistic. Drew Holiday, step back 3. And then the Suns again try to cut it back to 6, Drew Holiday 3. The Suns were putting on the best comeback effort that they possibly could, and they were almost there. Like I mentioned, they were within 4 points with less than 5.5 minutes to go in that third quarter. Drew Holiday kept them in that game. He kept the lead that Milwaukee would never give up because it felt like a massive, massive Suns run was coming. It felt like, oh boy, here come the Suns. They're going to take the lead. Is Milwaukee, how are they going to respond? Is their offense going to be in the mud? No, Drew Holiday is coming out there. Again, Ty, it's a little weary because the threes might be a little unsustainable, but they were falling. And they got what they needed. Like, he kept them in the lead. Like I just mentioned, it does worry me a lot. It does worry me a lot. That's unsustainable. But in this game, when he needed to hit those shots, he did.
I'm worried. Honestly, I am. Like, Ty, I agree with everything you said, Ron. That stretch in particular where he came up and he made those shots is crucial to the Bucks coming away to win. The fact that it was a comfortable win after they blew their lead is incredible, and he played a massive part in that. But he attempted 4 shots from inside the arc. That's not good. That just can't be how he's approaching these games. That's a problem for the Bucks because he is not this shooter. It's something we've talked about quite a lot in the playoffs. He's capable of having these games, but he is not going to have them all the time, as we're all too aware. So I would have liked to see him just attacking a little bit more. It doesn't change the value of his shots and the fact that he came up really big, but if we're kind of looking forward to what the Bucks are going to need from over the rest of the series, we can't expect multiple more 5 of 10 games from three-point range. He's going to have to go and get some easy points inside. The other thing I'll say with that is it's a good job he was making those shots because the Suns got back into the game by the Bucks going through that stretch when Phoenix had no big on the floor. They had no big that they could play. And what did the Bucks do? The Bucks started settling for 3-point shots. It's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Just attack. There is no one there. Attack. It's what you're best at. It's what they have no resistance to. And it was during that quarter that it started to become a little bit of, you know, settling for jumpers. And unsurprisingly, the Suns did cut into the lead and cut into it really, really rapidly. A little concerned, like all credit to him. It's not taking anything away from just how good he was to get the Bucks there. But going forward, I guess we'll just go with, you know, if it's a night where he doesn't have those 3-pointers, he's going to attack. But that's kind of going against some of the better judgment based on what we've seen from game one and game two. It may just be like home game. Here he is. Like I did make the joke, you know, role player at home. But you can look up and down the Bucks box score and you can see some evidence of it. You can see Bobby Portis being like playable in this game and having an impact. This was always going to be a spot for him. It's a home with everyone chanting his name. And guess what? It worked out. There may be some of that too for Drew Holiday. And that's just going to be crucial. His decision-making has to be the best it can be. And up until this point in the series, it hasn't been. Hopefully his confidence just soars because of this shooting.
Yes, that's
but it doesn't mean he just settles for shots. Don't just get confident in your jump shot. Get confident overall.
Exactly. I have a stat on his cover, Devin Booker, who you guys are hesitant to slander. I'm not even slandering, but it is worth noting. This is the 10th game this postseason where Booker shot 42% or worse from the field. That's 52% of his games in this playoff run. It's 10 of 19 games he's been that. The Suns are now 5-5 when Booker is worse than 42% from the field. They're 9-0. They're 9-0 when he's better than 42% from the field. This is also now that this is the second game against the Bucks. He's been below that mark. The only series he didn't have at least two games below that mark was Denver, who had literally no guards left on the roster. So I think
it's kind of Austin Rivers slander will not be tolerated.
Tyler. Would have loved to have him. Oh, well, I do think that's kind of a key to this series, though, is like you need to take advantage when Book is out because it seems like the Suns just roll when he's on. So going through something right now. I mean, that was weird to see him just not play. Like, I don't think that's good for the Suns in this series. Like, I don't think that helps a guy get out of something. Like, I'd rather just have him out there and maybe he gets hot and it probably doesn't swing the game, but it might help more in game four than
something to take it to game four. 100%.
All these videos of him sitting on the bench watching. But you know, Drew needs to continue to do work there. It's very positive for the Bucks that two out of the three games Booker's been below that 42% mark from the field. Suns are toss-up games for them when they're in that range. When he's on fire, they're just not. They've not lost so far. And maybe the Bucks could change that. All these sample sizes are very small, but it is just interesting to see that, you know, he's been. Teams have held him in check a little bit. It hasn't always killed the Suns. They're good. They have other things, but it is doable. And I think if Drew can continue to do that more often than not, it's gonna pave the way to the Bucks winning the series.
Something big on that is that Chris defended Chris Paul a lot more tonight. Did so very well. Great contests. Chris Paul was making just absolutely insane shots. It's like Kevin Durant flashbacks in terms of shot making.
Yeah.
It's like I look forward to, hopefully as NBA champions, with the next time the Bucks can be in a playoff series with like normal human beings again instead of these kind of players. It's just... it's insane because as much as you could be like, oh, you know, you get to this point in the playoffs, these are the guys you face. No, not really. Not always. Like there's only so many of these, even among the best players in the NBA. And what Chris Paul and Kevin Durant could do is a completely different level. But Chris really held his own against Chris Paul. And that's what allowed Drew to take more minutes on Devin Booker and to send Devin Booker to the bench. It would be a very big deal. I don't see how that's going to continue. Whatever thought experiment Monty Williams was running with there, like, he can't do it ever again. Like, he's going to play no matter how bad.
I think
he
should try it more. I
don't disagree, Ty, but I just
give CP his rest. He's old. Come on.
Do you know what I think is really interesting with Paul and what I think the Bucks can use to their advantage as long as it holds up is I think they're more comfortable navigating actions with him now, knowing he's just not going to shoot many threes. He has shot or made zero threes in seven different games this postseason. He was one of four tonight, and that's games he's played. He missed two games. I'm not counting those. Seven times he made zero threes. He's made more than two in the playoffs three times. Two of them against the Bucks. But yeah,
when
he's not
in the playoffs. He's operating in the pick and roll. He's not a pull-up three-point shooter. That's just not what he does.
I would say most of his threes have been catch and shoot. Like, he's off ball and Booker and the Bucks help one pass away. They need to just never do that. Like, always make the guy, Booker or CP, make them hit a pull-up three. Booker's going to hit some because he's just a streaky shooter, but percentage-wise, neither of them are going to kill you on pull-up threes over the course of a series. Not like they will on catch and shoot. And if you know, hey, we're going to make CP shoot threes. We know he doesn't really want to do this. He'd much rather pound the air out of the ball for 15 seconds and then do whatever he does. I do think it makes it a little bit easier to play defense, knowing like there's just less you have to worry about. Like the thing about Durant is it's like anything. He'll do anything. He'll do whatever he wants to do, but
it's going over versus under a screen. And that's what Milwaukee's figured out. They have figured out that they can go under Chris Paul screens, especially high actions, and they can just recover because he's not going to beat you with quickness. They can just recover because it's a straight line for them, and a straight line is, you know, the quickest distance between 2 points. Chris Paul is going to want to snake around, and if you can just get a straight line lateral movement, we saw that a lot with Jrue Holiday in game two and even with Chris Middleton in this game. If you just dart under the screen and meet him at his point on the other side, nothing was accomplished on the offensive end with that screen. And that's sort of taken away a lot of actions in the pick and roll with Chris Paul. But given he is making shots at a ridiculous rate, it's just it's incredible. That little step back he had on Giannis where he tried to have dribble moves and he didn't really lose Giannis, but Giannis recovered, had a great contest. And Chris Paul, all 6 feet of Chris Paul, just fades away. It hits an insanely beautiful shot over him. Can't do much about that. There's not much defense you can play on that. And Giannis tried his absolute best, but there's just some shots you can't really defend. But in terms of actual pull-up mid-range shooting, the Bucks have done a masterful job of navigating these pick and rolls better, especially since they sort of went away from switching 1 through 5 and sort of switching 1 through 4 and letting whoever it is, whether it's Portis or Brooke, drop, whoever it's at times that they don't want to switch. They're just going under the screens, and that's just a subtle adjustment that was there and they made, and it's paid dividends.
You know what else takes away Chris Paul pick and roll actions? Getting Ayton in foul trouble.
Yeah.
This is a big deal, and this is something that, I don't know, should have been obvious to me and everyone at the start of the series, but for obvious reasons really clicked in this game. If you can nullify one of those guys, and I know which one is easier to nullify, you're going to kind of take the two of them away, because if Chris Paul has a great game, DeAndre Ayton is likely going to have a great game, vice versa. You know, that's something where if you take that away, particularly with just the lack of bigs on this Phoenix roster, Chris Paul doesn't have a dance partner. And it gets a lot more difficult for him, particularly at his size, with that reluctance. He doesn't want to have to be relying on three-pointers. He doesn't have to be shooting that all the time. Like, if you can take the impact Ayton has away from this, you're also really going to hurt what Chris Paul is doing. And that is just massive. That's a way where it's like, if you could repeatedly attack Ayton and make it difficult for Ayton, and you won't always get him in foul trouble. So make it difficult and wear on him is really all I could say. He's playing a lot of minutes. He obviously didn't tonight, but he has up until this point in the series. Make him feel those minutes and see if you could take anything away from the pick and roll with him and Chris Paul. You're not just, you know, limiting what Ayton is doing to hurt you, but you're doing that with Chris Paul as well. And that's just such a big deal, that particular combination, they're so closely tied with how they both want to play, that if the Bucks can do anything to disrupt that, as they did tonight, you see what happens. Like, that's, you can get a blowout win without even playing a perfect game. And that is a really big thing for the Bucks. This game was far from perfect. They won by 20 points.
I know it definitely was something that didn't click for me for this game until this game, for Ayton being in foul trouble. I know Mike and Sam on our preview pod with the guys over at the Timeline, they were like, if Ayton is in foul trouble, that's the avenue for Milwaukee to really, really get a stranglehold on this series and win this series. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure, that makes sense. But Adam, you bring up a great point. It takes Chris Paul out of the equation as well. We saw that in full force tonight, because who else is going to run those pick and rolls with him? Like, we saw Frank Kaminsky.
The funny thing is, CP had Frank the Tank shooting 3 for 5 from the field in pretty scant minutes. But the issue
is, because they were trapping those.
The issue is, it's not as effective. He can still score some, but with running with CP, the issue is really on the other end, where Ayton is a very good defender. They can't play Kaminsky enough to keep doing it. And when they go small, like, if you want to run pick and rolls with Torrey Craig, by all means, good luck. Let go and let God, if that's the strategy.
Oh, and remember on our pregame show on YouTube, one of the listeners suggested that you should play 48 minutes tonight, and I was against the idea. I didn't think this was optimal for the books. If Frank Kaminsky's out there, I think you get some minutes.
Hey, listen.
How's the jumper?
Hey, I'll tell you what. I was hitting my jumper yesterday when I was playing. And like I mentioned on pregame show, my 10-foot runner, absolute catch. Oh, yeah.
Sounds Jeff Teague-ish.
Yeah, I was better than Jeff Teague couldn't hit a layup to save his life. My goodness.
Not his best game. Not a good Jeff Teague game.
The anti-Teague game.
Again, he kind of survived, which is just his thing. He's very books-like. He's, I guess, morphing into the books. You just can't kill Jeff Teague. He's just he's there. He's finding a way to contribute to a team in the finals. His minutes aren't completely terrible, even though his individual play can be terrible in those minutes. I don't know how it works.
Is he honestly pulling
a trick on all of us? I'm cool with whatever is happening that's helping him to help the books to a win, though.
I think a lot of it is he doesn't really get picked on like some of the other bad Bucks defenders. Like, I feel like he just holds up defensively. It's kind of like
he's competitive.
Guard, it's the guard version of Pat to me, mm-hmm. and where it's like, is he great? No, good is almost a stretch, but like
definitely a stretch.
Yeah, on just strictly defensively, but like doing enough to where you're not bleeding points in terms of like, or thinking about like, you know, Forbes, something of that nature. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I'm worried we're going to get a bad Teague plus minus game at some point. Hopefully we run out of Teague minutes before we get there, but I don't think that's going to happen by game four. I want to talk about Chris before we get to the big Brook Lopez discussion. I thought Chris had an interesting game. I thought he started out very well. I hate that he ended with 14 shots in this game. 18 points for Chris, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. I think part of it was, you know, Drew and Giannis did so much scoring in the third. I think Chris kind of just let his foot off the gas. But, you know, we talked about after game two, like he just needs to be more aggressive than that. I still think he needs to be a lot more aggressive than he was in this game.
I mean, he had 3 points in the second half.
Yeah, it's not great. I mean, again, they won comfortably. I think that does change it. I think Chris is one of the more willing players to just take a step back when things are going well and not press.
But even in that third quarter.
But yes, he should do more.
A little bit.
He's haywire. Just not touching the ball enough is honestly what I'd say. Like, it's not even about what is he just wasn't getting enough touches where it's like, get yourself involved, make some passes, make some plays. You can do it. Because there were certainly times where players that were not Giannis are true. We're, you know, trying to do some stuff. We were just talking Jeff Teague. That Jeff Teague, Bobby Portis combo that ended up in a turnover where Giannis and Chris were on the other side of the floor is just like all time stuff.
That was one of the greatest Bucks moments in history. Just absolute greatest in terms of pure entertainment value. Because my goodness, they saw that Bobby Portis was being denied by Torrey Craig. They were like, no, 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 no. We are not swinging this ball to the weak side where Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton are. No, we are getting that ball back to the strong side, and we are throwing that entry pass to Bobby Portis.
A couple of heat check moments, though. Bobby had one earlier as well. Remember Bobby decided to put the ball on the floor and was like, oh, I'm going to be Giannis here? It's just like, no, just keep doing what you're doing. Just keep tidying up and, you know, they'll drop off some passes and you just go up and dunk it kind of thing. But yeah, there's a
couple of here's the stat checks to crystallize the point you're making, Adam. There we go. In 32 combined minutes, Portis and Teague attempted 15 shots. In 41 minutes, Chris Middleton attempted 14 shots. That's terrible. That's objectively terrible. And it wasn't, like you were just saying, it wasn't like those were all, you know, the good players opened up looks for those guys and they shot. Those guys were just like going out there and saying, hey, it's Jeff Teague / Bobby Portis time, sometimes jointly. It's got to be Chris Middleton time more often. That's like one of the more, probably the second most worrying trend-wise thing about this. But hopefully it just is going to lead us to even more positive variance, Chris, for the rest of the series.
Thanasis Antetokounmpo had 14% as many shots as Chris Middleton in 5% of his minutes. Just to put that out there.
That is incredible.
OTA. A lot of TA minutes, but only because of garbage time.
He's
one of the realest out there.
That's a lot for him. That's like eight times his normal minute allowance.
I know. We count his minutes in seconds. They should have another column on the box score. Just says seconds. They only use it for Tsonasis.
Forbes only plays 4 minutes and 13 seconds. I think we're finally seeing the no more Forbes that we've been asking for. When he missed the wide open corner three catch and shoot, I was like, all right, pal, if you're not making that one, then what is the
point? Not that guy, pal. You're not
the straight on one, though, is kind of his shot. And that was like strong arms to the extreme. So it's just
he's pressing. He's definitely pressing. I mean, I get
free agent potentially, or maybe not.
This guy has lost so much money.
Yeah.
I feel bad.
He's a player option, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think just I like everyone else on the roster.
I don't know.
Hey, I mean, he'll be helpful the next regular season.
That's a problem for another day.
Yeah. All right, let's do the Brook Lopez thing.
Yeah,
21 minutes for Brook in this game. Go ahead, Rohan.
No, it's just I feel like I might be I don't know. People might not agree with what I'm want to say here, but I'm not entirely mad at it in stretches. So when the Suns went ultra small and put Cam Johnson in when DeAndre Ayton was in foul trouble, I think it's okay to not play Brook Lopez in that situation. It's Adam, you're giving me a rough face here, but
we're gonna fight.
No, it's I understand. I understand that he probably should play, but I also see why there's a route to not playing him, because you could see that the Suns were actively trying to just get as much space on offense as possible, and that's what allowed Jay Crowder to hit those weird, wild step back, sidestep threes, is because every single inch that the Bucks collapsed, they took advantage of. And if the Suns are hot from three, or if Jay Crowder is hot from three in that stretch, even if the Bucks, who could not figure out a zone defense with like five small guys out there for some reason, even if Brook Lopez was out there, I don't think they're getting him the ball in that instance. Like, they weren't getting Giannis the ball in that instance. So I don't know if you're going to get like a positive offensive contribution, even though you theoretically should. I don't know if they would have gotten it. Because even if he's out there, who's to say that they would have made the right decision in those instances?
I think that's fair, because they weren't making the right decision when he was out there tonight anyway. He was spending way too much time out on the perimeter, and you're like, just get him inside. Look at the players he's playing against. Get him inside. And when he did get inside, particularly earlier in the game, you're like, oh, look how easy this is. Look how quickly good things happen when he's in there. My counter to that stretch is, I think it was the first play back in the game, the Suns were still small, and it's like he comes up with a big block, because right away they're like, oh yeah, we've just had kind of basically the freedom of the court. We have the freedom to shoot trees, with the freedom to go to the rim. The Bucks are just giving everything up. And also importantly, in that stretch where the Suns found life, that Cam Johnson, did he have two? No, he only had one offensive rebound, but I remember one pretty egregious one in that spell where it's like, okay, the Bucks have no one out there. I don't think Bobby was out there at the time either. Although there was a spell in the first half where Bobby was out there and Giannis was still at the five, and Giannis was still the guy under the rim in terms of rebounding position. I was like, get Bobby over there. Bobby was like guarding Torrey Craig. Do you remember this spell? It's like the Bucks weren't getting rebounds.
Bud's been stashing Lopez and Portis on Craig.
Got to get Bobby if he's out there, and particularly if Brook isn't. Like, the Bucks have struggled with their rebounding in those lineups. Get Bobby closer to the rim. Get Bobby crashing the boards. He's going to bring the energy, so you might as well channel it in that way. I just think there's so many, like we talked about the margins. Brook just gives you so many little things in so many different categories. It's not like you come in, you're just like, Brook Lopez turns the game because he's going to just go off offensively. You're right to say you can't necessarily trust the Bucks to go to him in the way they should, but it's all of the little things. It's if he gets 4 points and he's also coming up with a block, and then that block is deterring more drives, and all of a sudden you have a greater threat in the offensive glass, you're boxing out better on the defensive glass. it just makes you a better team. It just completely changes the complexion of your minutes. And the fact that we're saying, oh, you know, 21 minutes for Brook Lopez, it was 15 minutes up until like the 7 minute mark of the fourth quarter when he was brought back in. And some of that was basically garbage time then. So that's not even telling the story. He actually played less than the first two games where we already had a problem with it. Like, the Bucks won by 20 points. Great. I do not think what they did tonight is entirely sustainable. And the good news is there are still easy routes to more success for them. But just like it was before this game, trusting Brook more is going to be that. Have we got a running... So he was -1 in the last game, +6 in this one, +3 in the first game? Something like that?
I think so.
Like, okay, like there were multiple Bucks who came in. Bobby +19, Giannis +20, Drew +22 today. +8 for the series, having never been worse than a -1. You know, it's not telling the whole story. It's messy, it's noisy, it's game to game. But when in every game, your individual plus minus is not going to be, you know, any worse than -1 so far. If it's not telling you,
he was -17 in game one.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, the third quarter when they dropped.
Okay, well, forget everything I just said then. This Jordan and I had the same conversation, and I forgot about that the other day as well. Yeah, I've lost.
It was a great point. It was a great point for a while.
It was until it wasn't.
I think I'm coming in kind of in the middle here. I'm speaking to Jordan.
Ty Tresky out here.
Yeah. Like, I do think they need to play him more. The same point as before. Like, they don't have enough guys to not play him. And I think given the way the Suns are constructed, I just feel like there's always going to be a place you can stash him. I mean, Ayton, obviously. Kaminsky, obviously. Bud likes putting him on Torrey Craig. I think if you can just kind of ignore him as well. And he's just good. They have tapped into some stuff with the switching, and it has ground down the Suns' offense a bit. And I think a lot of that is – and I think this can apply when Lopez is out there too, but the Bucks are just like refusing to let Phoenix get the matchups they want on that end. And that's everything, right? Like, they're making Phoenix, namely – Booker and CP, like, okay, you're going to beat Middleton or Tucker or Drew if you're going to do something. Like, we're not going to let you, you know, get Bobby whenever you want, get Brooke whenever you want. And again, I think they can do some of that stuff with those guys on too better, but it's a little hard to argue with results. And I do think Bobby's plus minus is in this game, I'm sure people will use it. They were really good with him on the floor. Wasn't necessarily his best game. And every time he traps, I'm still fearful of like all the shots that it opens up.
They trap a ton when he's out there too. They're just not trusting him in either of their kind of base schemes at this point.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, that's the way. If you do that, then it pretty much guarantees you're not going to have him one-on-one against those guys, right? Like, trap until you make sure the more capable defender is out there, and then basically run back to the paint and then let whoever's in there swing out to the shooter. Honestly, I don't hate it that much as a strategy though, just because, again, you're going to make the Mikhail Bridgeses of the world and Crowders beat you. And you know,
I think it's the bridge eye.
Sure. Crowder, and again, both of those guys have had great games. Bridges kind of did beat them in game two. But if you're frustrating the two best guys in the process, it might be worth it. I think there's more room for Bobby than we thought, but I think there also has to be more room for Lopez than we've seen.
Now, I'm going to dig my heels in on Bobby. I think there's plenty of room for Bobby in home games. And overall, for anyone getting too carried away, I'd say, well, let's just wait and see what happens when they go back to Phoenix. And we don't know yet. We've got to see how game four plays out. There is just the kind of not insignificant matter of, you know, is this just a once-off game, or have the Bucks found something where they're going to be able to break this open and build up a lead and kind of run away from the Suns? Like, when that kind of thing happens, Bobby is perfect because he's just going to add fuel to the fire. He's going to bring more momentum. And when a game opens up, one, when you can get out and transition, like the absolutely beautiful, like... one of the best books, Fast Breaks, not just ending in some sort of incredible Giannis dunk, just in terms of absolutely silky smooth. Like, that's, they just didn't have avenues to do that in game one and two. And you get there in this game, and yeah, if that's happening, it's a Bobby Portis game. There's room for him in the game. It's dicey with his defense, though. You're right on the trapping. You can kind of live with it until you can't. But it's entirely possible.
That's the thing.
Well, if you had, say, if it was, you mentioned Bridges, but if Mikal Bridges was like having a 3 of 5 three-point shooting night tonight, and you've got Crowder out there as well, suddenly that becomes a problem.
Yeah.
Because you're playing to the open trees. I don't even think that was always the case in previous games this series when that happened in game two, most notably. But if you're having Bobby out there kind of pretty reliably for extended minutes, you're doing that. I think the more you're leaning into that, the more the Suns are going to lean into exposing that and figure that out. Like, you can't show Chris Paul, a guy who's going to trap him over and over again, and expect that not to be picked apart, honestly, by next game. Like, I'd like to see Bobby put a couple of games
together. He picked it apart this game.
He did pick it apart this game. That's true. Like, I'm very happy that the Bucks got a positive contribution from him because they need all they can get. But it does still feel like the home games are going to be his spot in this series. And you know what? That's perfect. If Bobby Portis can help the Bucks win 3 home games, they might win a championship. But it's more generally, it's tough. And honestly, I don't think Bud trusts either Bobby or Brook. And that's my bigger concern when you see some of the rebounding. It's the stretches where it's without both of those guys, because so much of the regular season, even a game like this where you've got Bobby playing well, you know, Bobby's not a center. He's not really a center. So you could go to what's like a small ball lineup, have him out there and still have some size, still have some rebounding. Going away from that is different. It's different for the Bucks. It's putting something that Bucks fans have wanted for years, which is Giannis kind of at the five, where you hope you can weaponize him. But we're seeing some deficiencies, and rebounding is kind of chief among those.
I do think if Giannis continues to look more spry as we go, those lineups, they're still going to clearly not be as good at rebounding. I do think if he's got a little more bounce, if Pat's, assuming Pat's also out there, Tucker, and it's the big, honestly, the swing factor and the rebounding of the, I mean, outside of Giannis, who's the first one, if he's going to box out and go for boards, it changes a lot. But like Chris playing like he's 6'8", which we've seen at times in these playoffs, they're not all that small when they go Giannis at five, right? Like,
not at all.
And the guys who are little are very strong and great rebounders. They just need to commit to it and be better. I mean, I thought
the only problem, Ty, is the boxing out. It's like if PJ Tucker could take control and be like, I'm going to focus on boxing out so Giannis can go. Like, that is the problem. It's they're missing quite literally what Brook does so Giannis can go and clean up. Like, if someone else can offer that so Giannis can just go and grab the board rather than fight for position, there's then no problem with those lineups. It's just not something he's looked remotely comfortable with.
Well, the issue is,
like, the only thing,
Giannis is the only guy who's going to be down there, though, right?
Like, yes.
The way where the positionally where everyone else guards, there won't be. So it has to be him. And, you know, you can take worse bets than betting on Giannis to do something that he needs to do to win games. So I kind of get it. I do think we need more Brook. I don't hate kind of being reactive game to game. I mean, I thought this was a good Brook game, but they went on the huge run without him. You know, you unnecessarily insert him in, maybe it doesn't go all that well. So, but I am with you, Adam, in that 21 minutes and 15 real minutes for Lopez feels too little, just with how good he's been and how much he's proved. But it's going to be interesting. Game four, I feel like, is going to be fascinating for a lot of reasons.
My one question I'd pose to both of you on that is, let's say Drew Holiday isn't having a completely lights-out three-point game. Can the Bucks survive that stretch without Bobby or Brook, like they actually did for a while?
Not taking the shots they took. Go ahead.
If they actually gave the ball to Giannis, out of.
I just think, like, if they're going to, and if it happens again, getting Aiden off the floor is just a game-changer. You've got to punish them. You've got to tear them apart. It's like there should be no surviving because they don't have the players to survive when that happens. And my issue with that in this occasion is something we've talked about before. It's like the Bucks get Aiton off the floor. They get Aiton in foul trouble. And what's their reaction? The reaction is to match up with what the Suns have had to go to. Not be like, how can we expose what the Suns have left? It's like, oh, the Suns have gone small because they don't have Ayton. Bobby, you're out of the game. Brooke, you're out of the game. We're matching up. It's like, why are you playing on the back foot? Give yourself a chance to, particularly as you had a lead at that point as well, the lead evaporated, but you have a lead. Actually try to go with size and be like, this is what they don't have. We're going to take the initiative and show them something that they just cannot counter without putting that guy back in the game. That's my concern with that, is it's just playing on the back foot. It's like, no, you force him off the floor. Go and get them. I wanted to see Frank Kaminsky like humiliated in tears on the floor. They didn't go far enough. They did not go far enough.
I agree.
He was a minus 11 in 5 minutes for the first spell he was in the game. And I was like, you know, it's pretty good, but it could be more. It could be more. And next time he's in the game, I want to see it be more.
He's got to be picking up like a foul per minute because Bucks are just like getting in his face and dunking, basically. Like, I do agree with that. They settled for way too many shots. That maybe doesn't change if Brooke is out there, though. I mean, I think that's just a mentality thing for the team that they don't do enough generally. But I think it's a good point. I think I don't know how many times I can say it. They just need him.
I'm tired of saying it. I think people probably think I'm a crazy person at this point because it keeps coming up. But there aren't a whole lot of other things you can look to for the Bucks and be like.
And you like the big guys.
That's true. I'm on the record. This is my brand. People should expect it. But it's also, you're just like, what's out there for them to get? What are they not taking advantage of? And it's very clear to see, given the matchup, and they're not doing great with it. And that applies to Bobby, too. Like, that applies to Bobby. When you get a good Bobby game, I think there were parts of, you know, his size that they didn't take full advantage of, that they didn't lean into when the Suns were most vulnerable. They decided to play the Suns at their own game, which is crazy, absolutely crazy. Those guys are off the floor, and you're like, yeah, how about we play Chris Paul, like, kind of on his terms? Oh, they're going with Cam Johnson. Let's go small so that they can get away with Cam Johnson as a five.
Yeah.
Like, that's not acceptable. The Bucks are not a good team when it comes to hunting mismatches. When you don't have to hunt it, when it's right there in front of you, you've got to take advantage.
One thing I want to get to in terms of actual size, I don't want this to get overlooked. This was, aside from getting dunked into oblivion, this was a great PJ Tucker game.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really good game.
God, did he get dunked into oblivion.
Yeah, he really did.
I really thought that was a charge. Live, I thought it was a charge.
I did live,
would have
too.
Been a charge for Giannis.
I think the other angle, you could see he was still moving as Cam went up.
I think he might have just been, yes, yeah. So he's slightly kind of gone under him, but it's super close. And
I was
Rowan
glad.
Is right. They're the kind of calls that, you know, 50-50 calls. I'll be curious to see how they go. It's actually just strange to see a 50-50 call go against the home team. Not complaining if it stays that way, you know, across the course of the series. And it was a phenomenal play and a great highlight. And it would have been, you know, not great if they'd just been like, no, actually, that's a charge. He was just there in time.
I thought it was good for basketball that it was a block.
For sure.
Yes, no, ban the charge. The charge sucks. I hate it. But yeah, great PJ Tucker game. I thought he did a great job finding seams within the Suns defense, especially when they went zone. And just in general, like, he was actually moving off ball and getting into lanes and getting dump off passes. Like, that was a weird thing to see for PJ Tucker, instead of just plopping his butt in the corner and like not doing anything else. It was good to see. I thought he had some nice plays. He actually hit a three. Like, he made an impact, and I thought it shouldn't go overlooked.
I think we need to see that. Like, I hate it when he doesn't move. Like, I know all the energy exerts on defense, et cetera, but his minutes are a lot more controlled in this series because it's not a great defense. I mean, he's still playing strong defense, but he also had five fouls, so that kind of helps with that as well. But it's nice to see him moving a little bit, and I do think, you know, making some twos can help him make threes as well. Like, see the ball go in, I feel like it helps with the shooting. I mean, that's, if there's any lesson to learn from that for whatever Rockets spell, I think it's that maybe not every single shot should be a three, because it's not always the most sustainable. But yeah, I thought it was a
PJ Tucker's 3-point percentage in the finals. Any guesses? This is obviously not on massive numbers, but just as Rowan said, he finally made a tree. I was like, hmm, I feel like he's 66. Been making quite a lot. 60.
60.
Really? It feels yeah. like 10.
Was he 3 for 5?
Yeah, that would be, the numbers would check out on that.
We'll take it. That's the kind of thing where it sounds so great and it's like 3 points a game on threes. Thanks, PJ. But again, you take it. You need every point you can get.
Just out of curiosity, because this is the kind of thing I haven't looked at yet. I don't have either of you looked like a individual shooting percentages for these finals yet?
No. Where are they updated? NBA?
NBA.com/stats. 47.1%, second highest percentage of none. I'm not counting Jordan Moore as 1 for 1 from this game.
More points in the finals than Melo.
47.1% second place book. Who do you think it is?
Thanasis.
No. It's threes, right? There's no way.
Yeah, Thanasis. I'm talking about threes.
Oh,
yeah.
We're talking threes? Oh.
Yeah.
I don't even think Thanasis.
Pat Connaughton.
Correct.
Yep. Yeah. I can see it was a. It was another great game for the agenda today. It was a strong game for the agenda. 30, exactly 30 high quality minutes from Pat Connaughton.
So we're returning.
Was it the end of the fourth quarter or the end of the third where ESPN put up a shot of the banner and then they went to the jersey numbers? I was like, this is for you, Ty.
Well, no, he hit the momentum capping three that. Oh, no, was it the end of the second quarter?
But there was. He made a big play and. Then it went to commercial. On the way to commercial, they were showing the banners and the jersey numbers. I was like,
oh yeah,
Ty's got an in at ESPN now. How has this happened? The interesting thing when you look at
Sorry, Adam. PJ Tucker, are we retiring his jersey? Because Pat Connaughton, same 3 for 5 shooting as PJ. 8 points compared to 7 points. I'm just wondering if that's the criteria.
No.
So no PJ for 1 point. 1 point gets your jersey retired.
Not yet.
Sorry, Adam, continue.
My point is just going to be that like the Bucks are up to 37.9% now from deep in the finals. I know that first game, which you lose while shooting the ball really well, helps that. But it is interesting to see just this kind of middle of the pack. Brooke, 36.4%. Chris, 36%. Drew, 35.3%. Bobby, 33.3%. Bryn, 33.3%. Teague, 33.3%. Like, everyone not named Giannis is doing okay to well with their three-point shooting, and yet it doesn't feel like that.
Well, I think that's because the low attempt guys are doing the best right now. Like, if you trade PJ's 60...
That's not a low attempt guy. That's not a low attempt guy. 5.7 per game.
But if you trade PJ's 60% for Chris's 36%, the series feels a lot different right now.
36, though, isn't – like, we're not a million miles off.
No.
You know, sure, it'd be great if he's 45%, but we're just a shot here or there from being like, oh, yeah, he's shooting it pretty well. Like, 36 is better than I thought. 35.3, same place for Drew. The problem with both guys is what we were over multiple times in the last pod, which is just they're inconsistent. It's like, yeah, it's going to grade out of something that's pretty good, but it's could you just get somewhere in the middle every single time? That would be great.
I'd like to make a prediction.
Okay.
I think we're going to get a Bobby Portis shooting game in the finals. We haven't really gotten one in the playoffs at all. Not really. Maybe was it one against Atlanta? I thought most of his work was in the perimeter.
Game five against Atlanta? That was the game he had 19 points, right? I think there was a couple of threes in there.
For the postseason thus far, he is shooting.
He was 1 for 5 from three in game five.
It was not game five then.
31% from three this playoffs for Portis, which is below Tucker but above Drew Holiday still. I think he's legitimately a very good shooter now. I think it's a bit of a variance thing. And I think, especially if you're talking about how can he live on the road, if he's knocking down a lot of those threes and you know he's going to get some good looks, like that could be the way he survives. Because I believe in him as a shooter. Honestly, at this point, way more than Forbes, even though the percentages are similar. I think we're going to get one sometime in these next 3 to 4 games.
Does he believe in himself as a shooter right now? There was one in particular in this game. He was very slow to pull the trigger, though. Very slow. Like, and he didn't. He ended up passing it up. But I've never seen him go through the motion so slow.
Release.
This was even slower than usual. I was actually quite struck by it because I was like, Bobby, you're not just gonna take that shot. Like, it's very un-Bobby Portis to be like, I'm wide open here. This is my shot, and to overthink it and overthink and go slow and pass out. I was like,
I feel like he is unfortunately the one guy who plays or at least thinks more like the way we want the whole team to, in terms of like he will pump fake or pretend to pull up a three pretty often and then drive and try to get to the rim, which is probably not a great process for him, but it's hard to get too upset because I do feel like we would like more of the Bucks to play that way. Portis does that, I think, too much. I would like for him to shoot more. It's an interesting question, Adam.
I did say he was 1-for-5 in game 5. I was wrong. He was 1-for-3 in game 5 against Atlanta.
Not as bad.
Yeah, but I wanted to correct myself because I got it wrong.
Trying to make me look bad.
I got it. I'm saying I got it wrong here.
I'm glad we've got it on the record.
Yeah. I just want to pull up. He's had 2 games with more than 1 made 3. He's had 0 games with more than 1 made 3 since the first round, Bobby Portis.
I'm now having, like, this is just basically for my amusement, your amusement, hopefully some listeners' amusement. You know, individual offense rating, defense rating, net rating, very noisy stats. But who do you think is the Bucks' net rating leader against the Phoenix Suns so far?
Bobby Portis.
No, it's probably
Booker. Giannis.
Giannis would make sense. It might be Pat.
It's Jeff Teague. The Bucks are outscoring the Phoenix Suns by 12.9 points per 100 possessions while Jeff Teague is on the floor.
Do you know the very quick and easy answer for why? Phoenix's bench has been awful, and Teague only plays against Phoenix's bench.
Tonight was a really good example of that.
Campaign was supposed to be like this whole thing. I know he got hurt at one point and he hasn't been the same, but like the bench plus minus for the Suns has been terrible in every game. And it's really like, you know, Bud is going to continue at least for, I think, the next couple games.
Like, Abdel Nader's getting minutes. This bench isn't good. It's not good.
Monty Williams is right up there with Bud in terms of playing these guys. Like, it makes it a lot more playable and survivable for Bud.
He's actually worse because the starters just don't play minutes. Like, if Bucks fans were supporting that team, there would be mutiny. There would have been mutiny quite some time ago because, okay, they've had an easy ride and they haven't had to play starters heavy minutes.
If you look at their minutes totals, and even outside of Booker and Ayton, which I don't think there's a good case for not playing either. Can I address the fouls thing again? It's a stupid fallacy to not play your best players if they're in foul trouble in the second half of a game. Does not make any sense. The worst case scenario is they foul out and they don't play, which is literally what happens if you bench them for extended stretches. Ayton comes back into the game. The Suns are down 20 in the fourth quarter. It's basically over. It's a fallacy. You're not helping your team by doing that. It's stupid. But even outside of that and whatever happened with Booker, Mikal Bridges, 27 minutes in this game. Meanwhile, Campaign gets 25 and they lose them by 18. Torrey Craig gets 15. Kaminsky gets nearly 14 minutes. Abdel Nader, and there's some garbage time, but
I think you should stop pointing this out and let Monty Williams be Monty Williams. This is all I'm going to say.
It's like, listen,
I dare him to play Frank Kaminsky over 20 minutes. I dare him.
If they're going to
get some Jalen Smith minutes.
If they're going to go blow for blow like this, it's so good with the Bucks because we know they've won the honest minutes every game. If the bench minutes are a wash because both teams are trotting out like these guys where everyone on NBA Twitter just goes, how is X player in this game in the finals? That works. That's a good formula. Win the honest minutes, punt the bench minutes.
I want mic'd up in game 4 ESPN. It's Monty staring into Frank the Tank's eyes. It's like, I know you're down. I know you're down. You know, it's a tough 18-0 run the Bucks just got on there in your 2 minutes in the game. But use your physicality, you know? Use your physicality and you'll be all right.
He believes in guys too much.
You know, I'm obviously being disingenuous. The Ayton moment was cool and clearly brought something good out of it.
I love Monty Williams, but man,
so do I. Really, really good guy, good coach, but he has his own issues, like every coach in the NBA does.
Like, when
what about Jeff Van Gundy's moment, by the way?
Oh, Christ.
Which one?
The one where he really... Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Man. There's a middle ground on that.
There's a middle ground. It's
I got tweets in this game. Ridiculous. I got tweets in this game. Two tweets, I think. Don't think there's more than that from people about Bud not making adjustments in these playoffs.
I replied this to friend of the pod because we keep talking about him, Jackson Frank. Like, people are mad at the wrong Budenholzer things, and the national narrative will never get it right because I don't care. But like, that's not been the issue for me.
He's always series, rotations and managing minutes.
In previous years, it was adjustments. This year, it's rotations and managing minutes.
It's kind of always been rotations and managing minutes.
I don't want to relitigate.
There are years where maybe both of those things were the problem.
Exactly.
Yes.
But the one that has always gone back to his Hawks time as well, managing minutes and when he chooses to play guys together, maybe even a bigger problem than the minutes he plays guys, is just the combinations he chooses. But so, that's still a problem.
So there was only 1 minute and 18 seconds of true garbage time. The indicator, Tyshawn Alexander minutes. So not as many as I thought. Sorry, Tyshawn Alexander. But like Chris Paul.
Sam Merrill minutes, to be fair.
Well, you didn't have to do that.
I'm being fair.
Chris Paul, less than 34 minutes. Crowder, less than 33 minutes. Booker, 29. Like, okay. In a game where, what did Giannis log? 37, nearly 38 minutes. Okay. If Giannis is going to play more minutes than any of the best Suns players, that works for me. I'm okay with that.
The best player in the series is playing more minutes than anyone on the other team.
If the best player in the series is getting more minutes against bench players than the best players on the other team, it's probably a good equation.
The math checks out. I just ran it.
It's interesting.
Numbers never lie. I said that right, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I agree. More Kaminsky, more Abdul. We all believe in Abdul. Monty, you're doing great.
Yep. As usual.
Abdul Nader, I've a story about Abdul Nader. I don't know if it's a good story. It's not a good story. So the one and only time that I have been credentialed in person at an NBA game and NBA practices, Abdul Nader was on the Boston Celtics.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember. I'll have to check this. There was another guy who looked really... Oh, I know who it was. It was Shane Larkin. Shane Larkin and Abdul Nader, pretty similar, had identical haircuts at the time. And I was like, I could get an Abdul Nader quote, but what if it's actually Shane Larkin I end up speaking to? So I just left that one completely. I was like, Daniel Tice, I'll talk to you. So that's my Abdul Nader. That's unfortunately not the most memorable. Hopefully he doesn't have like a colossal game 4 to burn himself into my memory forever now. But yeah.
That was a great story. I did enjoy that.
Thanks, Ron. I appreciate the support.
I don't think we're going to see, if we see an Abdul Nader takeover game, I'll know that this is just all a simulation. That's the
he
key.
Has yet to score in this series, and he has 4 playoff points. So given that he's playing against the Milwaukee Bucks, it's almost a certainty.
That's more than Dominique Wilkins.
It's wild the Bucks split the last 2 games, with game 2 is the Mikal Bridges game. Game 3, they get Cam Johnson and Jay Crowder in the same game. Bucks 20-point win. Some interesting stuff happening in this series. Who would have thought the finals would be interesting?
I mean, like, did the Bucks or did the Suns, waste the Jay Crowder game and the Cam Johnson game? We'll see.
This is the benefit to never getting the game. The Bucks never make the shots. You can't waste the game. Never happens.
Game 4 is really interesting, guys.
Give me a score prediction.
Game 4. Oh god, it's not that interesting. If the Bucks win Game 4 convincingly, the momentum swing is a big deal at that point in the series. You know, it's a big, big deal. And it's also, I think, where the advantages of actually not having home court, as much as this series may prove that home court is more important than anything, not having home court in the finals, if you can get two game five tied, the kind of the 1-1-1 switch is, it's giving you some interesting opportunities, particularly if you've been down 2-0 and you come back, it's like, oh, okay, Phoenix, you're back home. That's great. But if you lose this one, you know, we've got a home closeout game to go four in a row and wrap this thing up. Like, it's just, it's a very different kind of pressure. And it's also, you know, you're at a point in the series where you don't even have to do anything wrong. If you just have a bad start, shots aren't falling, you find yourself kind of deep in a hole that you're not going to get out of, that could be it. That could be your finals. So
I can't even imagine the kind of Giannis.
Bucks
game.
Were a mile away, and now they're kind of close. Sorry, Ty.
No, I thought my mistake. I can't even imagine the kind of Giannis game we get in Game Five if/when Milwaukee wins Game Four. I mean,
a weasel out of it. Give me a score prediction, guys.
119-107.
Milwaukee?
Yes.
Okay. Adam?
I don't even know where to start with this.
What's a number?
I think the Bucks will win.
Okay. That's a solid start.
I'm going to go Bucks 124. Ooh. Suns 96.
Oh,
wow.
We're getting some spice
kind of
up in here.
Kind of a blowout there.
Yeah,
kind of. It is a blowout.
It's a pretty big blowout.
Yeah.
And I honestly, based on what I saw tonight, I could see that repeating. It doesn't necessarily mean like that's how the series is from now on in. They can all go wrong too, though. The Bucks, of course, can all go wrong. It's the Bucks. But they do need to not just fall in some traps. Drew Holiday has to not rely purely on his jumper, because chances are that won't be there like it was. One thing we didn't mention about Chris is Chris actually had some success. The couple of times he did drive, he finally got to the free throw line.
Yeah.
Do some more of that. Again, you've mentioned him being 6'8 in other contexts, basically, but he's got size against a lot of the guys he'll be driving against on the Suns too. Don't be afraid to do that, particularly when they're just fouling on contests. Like, they're just not doing a good job of contesting shots without fouling. So get driving and see how that goes. But if the Bucks could just tidy it up, and if Bud can be smarter, they've got another 2 days off. If they can be smarter with, you know, picking your spots, grouping players together in a way that's sensible, where you've got protection, you're not kind of exposing all of your weak spots at once. Yeah, I think the Bucks could win in a really big way and be in the dream position going back to Phoenix.
The fascinating thing I'm going to watch is, how much does Devin Booker play in the next game?
I don't like this tie.
This thing interests me. I'm not making this a thing.
Devin Booker's going to score 60 points now.
Fine. Let's see him do it.
In a way,
I
mean, he scored 70 some in a loss before, so it might be just fine. But you just make a weird conversation very possible when you just glue a guy like that to the bench in the midst of a bad game.
I mean, I'll be curious to see how the narrative kicks up. Like, yeah. Because we all know if roles were reversed and that was not just Giannis, if that was Chris or Drew, the noise around that.
That's why I'm doing my part.
I admire your own belief in your own power and influence. And Ty, I'm going to encourage you to press on with that and see just how far you could take this thing. I searched. I was like, you know, it'd be good for us to talk about Devin Booker. There must be some quotes. Monty Williams must have been asked about it. So I was like, search Devin Booker on Twitter, expecting the first thing to show up must be that. Nope, nothing there. So Ty, the world needs you. The world needs you to pick up this cause and draw attention to it.
That's true. That's true, Ty. You're leading the campaign here. Just as a trickling post-game quote, I think this is just inspirational. Bobby Portis saying he came to Milwaukee so he can be the best Bobby Portis he can be. That's just inspirational right there. That's awesome.
It's adorable.
Love you, Bobby. Love you, Bobby.
Hey, Rohan, you're making a score prediction. You're not getting out of
doing this. Oh, no, I was going to. Have it. It's 113-103 Milwaukee.
Okay.
And Milwaukee's going to do that. We're going 6 of 28 from 3.
I feel like that was implied in all of our answers based on what we've seen thus far.
I'd rather it implied than just coming out and saying it, though.
Hey, they're going to get a win. It's going to be a grind-out win, and that's what this Milwaukee team is. They claim to be dogs. They've shown it in the past. They showed it this game. They can be dogs. And you know what? This is a series. This is absolutely a series again. It's not over. It's not a 3-0 deficit. And I think that's a great place to wrap up this post-game episode here on the Eurostep Podcast Network. If you did enjoy the show, make sure you leave a 5-star rating on Apple. Ty Windisch, do you have a 5-star rating for us to read out?
I do. Oh. We got a lengthy one. We got a good one. There's a couple new ones now. We're fueled for a little bit. We need more, as Rohan said. Apple Podcasts, 5-star review from B Koto 97. He says, Bucks in 6, no spaces, !! Boys, first off, I must say I love the podcast, especially throughout this postseason run. My only regret is I didn't listen to you guys earlier. Actually subscribed during the Nets series. Many people did. Thank you. Welcome. And has been part of my morning routine ever since. Ty, your work is impeccable, and I appreciate all the time you spend working and analyzing this team. You've been my Bucks Twitter account go follow since day one. Rohan, you're the diamond in the rough on this podcast. Frankly, I didn't know you existed until I started listening. But after listening, once your humor and character
I'm laughing knowing what's coming. I've read ahead. I know what's going, and I'm still laughing at that line. I feel like I've got off lightly.
Immediately got my respect and earned the follow on Twitter. I enjoy your sarcastic comment from time to time, and your facial expressions on video always make great memes when Ty got something outlandish to say. Adam McGee, my man, I love your goofy accent, and we need to get you to Milwaukee for a game soon. Succinct. Jordan, keep up the work, man. Your analysis and knowledge of the game is always something I look forward to and learn something from. Lastly, thank you guys for all your work to produce daily content for us listeners to enjoy. Y'all are amazing. Bucks in 6. Let's go, Bucks.
That's amazing. That's an incredible review, and that's honestly incredible. I wish
we had a synonym instead of goofy. I feel like goofy is kind of negative.
Nah,
it's just like
I do too. But this I'll forgive out. The second part. We need to get you to Milwaukee for games. Yeah. Soon. I'm going to choose to focus on that part of it, and also the part where B-Koto 97 had never heard of Rohan before listening to the podcast.
Hey, you know what? I'll take that as a compliment. I will take that as a compliment because they didn't know I existed. Listen to the podcast, they're like, "Oh, this guy's awesome." Like that's a compliment.
I love the brutally honest reviews. Like I'm not great. Kidding. Like I feel like I learned so much. I don't know.
I'm suspicious though, Ty. Your work is impeccable, and I appreciate all the time you spent working and analyzing this team. Do we know this isn't you?
No. No comment.
We don't know it's not you.
Exactly. No comment.
We need to do some digging, Ron. We need to start verifying these reviews independently. Yeah.
No, that is a great review. Shout out for leaving that review.
Thank you for leaving the review.
Yes, that is incredible. All jokes aside, we really do appreciate the support. It's incredible to see. It makes us feel better. It makes us feel better about producing this content so we can deliver the best content possible here on the Eurostep Podcast Network. Make sure you are subscribed on your podcast platform of choice. Adam, what do you have to say?
I'm just telling you not to forget YouTube again.
I was going to.
Adam's
I was
just big making YouTube sure. Guy.
Adam, I'm the guy. I'm trying to remember this because no one else. Is 6. I start the episodes because I'll forget it otherwise. I'm like, people need to know we're on YouTube.
Yes, we are on YouTube. Eurostep Podcast Network on YouTube. That's where we're doing our pregame shows live, usually around half an hour before the scheduled game time. And we've been doing those for the last 3 games of the series now, and it's been fantastic. It's been an incredible ride, and we hope to bring more content to you on the YouTube channel. Once again, that's Eurostep Podcast Network on YouTube. Yeah, like we mentioned earlier, make sure you leave a 5-star review on Apple and make sure you're subscribed on both YouTube and your podcast platform of choice. Check out all of the content across the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Go Bucks, everyone. And we will talk to you next time.